People are concerned because one time I reduced an entire room full of foreign visitors to the State Department to tears. I mean, was I too hard on the little Ukrainian orphans? Perhaps so. I don't know. But regardless, the administration now wishes me to start a campaign to make me appear to be more diplomatic and courteous. So shut up and listen or I'll have you killed. The plan shall consist of three parts and will be called Up Your Opinion. Part number one, our new motto will be, all right, fine. You don't want us to bomb you back into the Stone Age where you belong, you heathen enemies of America? Then you vote with us. Please. Secondly, each and every single one of my tirades will now contain 20% fewer F words. That's a big savings over a long period of time. And finally, I will drop my insistence that the Darth Vader theme song be played whenever I enter the United Nations building. So fine, if you want some namby-pamby globalist who worships at the altar of the UN, then don't support me, all right? But hey, if you think that Liechtenstein and St. Lucia are getting a little big for their britches and need to be pimp-slapped now and again, I am definitely your man. So support Bolton, because unpopular begins with UN. Thank you.
And now the Capital Steps bring you this tasty and lucrative word from our sponsor.
I was stuck at the office all night, so I thought I would stop for a bite. When I raised my fork, my eyes were popping. They'd put in an extra topping. Old finger. What a shock to find that my chili fries were digitized. It's such a cold finger. Is it yours? I'm sorry to be so crude. To point is rude. It's so grisly and wrinkly and sad. But it tasted like chicken. Not bad. But I had to leave. Now would you linger if someone had given you the old finger? It's a fact. There's one way to wreck your mood. It's finger food.
Well, welcome back. You're watching the all-new conservative Republican-run PBS, now known as GOPBS. Barney will not be seen today because we all know that dinosaurs never existed and are simply the product of liberal atheists looking to discredit creationism. Later tonight, join us for an all-new edition of Master Race Theater. Along with a groundbreaking new biographical series, Joe McCarthy, American Patriot. And our latest version of Scientific American, where we demonstrate how trees are the underlying cause of all forest fires. And for those of you who want to know what your values are worth, Antique Ideology Roadshow. And now, stay tuned for our new educational programming.
Sunny day, keeping the left away. On my way to where the air is sweet. All because of the current administration's clean air policies, which foster sound environmental principles without overburdening important industry concerns. Can you tell me how to get to Sesame Street? All right, everybody, welcome to the brand new Sesame Street! Let's get right to the fun with our very special guests, Miss Ann Coulter and Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist. Yay! Now, today we're going to be discussing a Dr. Seuss classic. Miss Coulter, welcome to Sesame Street.
I get it. Let's do a little wordplay. PBS, Sesame Street, Sesame Noodles, Noodles Chinese, Chinese Communist, Communist PBS.
Okay, then. Let's get right to the book discussion. We've got one of my favorite Dr. Seuss books, Horton Hatches the Egg. Miss Coulter, what do you think?
This book is a fantastic example of how any egg is a valuable life that can be nurtured if you just have an elephant willing to sit on it. Notice that Horton is not a liberal donkey like that Eeyore in Winnie the Pooh. That book should be burned, banned, and burned again. Now, let's look at my favorite book, Horton hears a who make a suspicious phone call and turns him into the Department of Homeland Security.
All right. Well, why don't we just go to Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist now. Oh, this is very exciting. Senator Frist, what do you think about my favorite fairy tale, Sleeping Beauty?
Well, Kermit, I have to say I have viewed the videotapes of Sleeping Beauty, and I do not believe she was asleep. I mean, as a medical doctor, I would have to say that she was fully conscious.
Fully conscious.
Did I say that? I never said that.
Well, that's about all the guests they'll allow on today. Join us next week when we'll tell young little girls how to avoid the problems that come with having a career. Now let's take it out with our brand new PBS theme song. We'll clean up each dirty show.
Filthy names have to go.
Bye-bye, Big Bird.
When INS makes its report, the Swedish chef will deport.
Bye-bye, strange words.
Once our whole agenda has been carried,
Bert and Ernie never will get married.
Now Big Bird won't fly or sing,
'cause we broke his left wing.
Big Bird, bye-bye.
And now in his new role as chairman of the Democratic National Committee, please welcome Howard Dean Quixote. The man of Vermuncha.
I'm Dean, the impossible Dean. I'm back on the national stage. I'll go to each state that we lost in. First stop is the state of enraged. I think I can still run again. This time Howard Dean must not fail. Someday I will run this great country without all those white Christian males. Here's why the left is freaked about me. I never drink decaf, and I'm an MD. But with the state of the party, it's said that they don't need a doctor, they need a mortician instead. And I know there are those who will say I'm without a full deck. And it's weird, but it sometimes appears that I don't have a neck. But the world will be better or else. I might get a little extreme. And now here is what you're expecting. I'll scream the impossible. Scream!
And now another in the Capitol Steps continuing educational series, Current Events for Little Tiny Children. Tonight's episode, Deep Throat, by Dr. Seuss. All the powerful and wealthy loved Nixon a lot, but Deep Throat in the FBI building did not. Deep Throat hated Nixon and his men who were cruder. He hated each Colson, each Dean, each Magruder. He hated John Mitchell. He wished he were dead. He hated the crew cut on Haldeman's head. And why did he hate Nixon's men, hate them all? He thought that his salary was two sizes too small. Now Hoover is dead. They brought in some new guy. It should have been me. He's not FBI. They passed over me because I once told the press I look better than Hoover in heels and a dress. So then came the trouble, and burglars were caught, and blackmail demanded, and silence is bought. And Deep Throat sat back, and he thought, and he thought. And he got an idea, an awful idea. Deep Throat got a wonderful, awful idea. So they choose a loser? It's my turn to choose. We'll see how they like being made front page news. So he called two reporters, said he had something good. One was Carl Bernstein, the other, Bob Wood. Word. And he met them in secret, in parking garages, in sewers, in tunnels, whilst getting massages. And he swore them to silence by oath and signed a note to never reveal who was really Deep Throat. And Nixon resigned. And the years passed on by, and people still wondered, hey, who was that guy? Who was that Deep Throat? And when will we learn? But Woodward stayed silent, as also did Byrne. Steen. Then Woodward got rich writing dense exposés and impenetrable prose that could stop cosmic rays. And Bernstein, not seen much, the reason's well known. He works at a Walmart outside of Bayonne. And now Deep Throat is old, and his mind tends to wander. And his grandkids would like jet skis and a new Honda. Hey, let's spill Grandpa's beans. Get him to admit it. Don't worry, he won't even know that he did it. So the secret is out. That's now ancient history. But wasn't it better when it was a mystery? The end.
Who is the guy who rants and raves?
Who likes to make a scene?
He's like a little bulldog.
A Korean Howard Dean.
And if we weren't so scared of him, we might just say he's mean.
'Cause though he's threatened soul, he hasn't got one.
We think you know who might just fit the bill.
Presenting Kim Jong-il.
How do you solve a problem like Korea? I have got nukes in case you haven't heard. U.S. respect would be a panacea. Your evil acts is only list us third.
Oh, maybe you ought to do the world a favor. Maybe you shouldn't poke us with a stick.
But what do you have to see to get you to notice me?
If you had oil, that would do the trick.
Oh, I think that Freud would say this small cation
is compensating for his tiny height.
Well, good evening. Thank you all for being here, and
for agreeing to be the witnesses for the first reading of my living will. A living will by me. If ever I should fall into a questionable medical condition, I wish to be kept alive by any means possible, including but not limited to paddles, pulleys, small diesel engines, electrodes, and or professional puppeteers. If, however, after 30 days in such a state, a Playboy playmate from any year following 1994 should enter my room, whisper into my ear a comment containing any of the following words: sponge bath, thong, throbbing, spank, or twin sister, and I still do not respond, I hereby relinquish my will to live. Under no circumstances should I be fed anything I wouldn't eat while conscious, which includes the four food groups: Cheetos, Slim Jims, beer, and Slurpees. These worked perfectly well to sustain me through my last vegetative state, college. If there is any question regarding my condition, please resist the temptation to consult my beloved family members, who would only allow their immense caring for me to get in the way of their various lawsuits against each other. Instead, in deciding my fate, please consult a politician. The politician should meet the following criteria. 1. The politician should not know me or have ever met me, and preferably should not be able to spell or pronounce my name properly. The politician should have a mind nimble enough to hold firm views on medical procedures, even though he failed ninth grade biology. Similarly, he must be able to decry the awfulness of my condition, whilst either being A, conservative enough to oppose the research which might improve my condition, or B, liberal enough to be ineffective. 3. The politician should be able, with a straight face, to talk of the beauty and sanctity of life, unless, of course, we're talking about death row inmates, prisoners of war, or useless, space-wasting paupers whose insurance has run out. And finally, my last wish is this: whatever my state, please have extensive coverage of me appearing with this politician on national television. No matter how bad I appear, I'll look good by comparison. Thank you.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the finest hotel in all of Cuba. Come on down. We'll leave the searchlight on for you. If you're under arrest with no charges to confess, come where the setting's great and made to captivate. You won't mind the wait. Though you'll get no trial date, you'll be getting a tan like you couldn't in Afghanistan. Here at Guantanamo,
there's breakfast burritos, we can swim in Speedos. They let us play Yahtzee, Durbin calls them Nazis. There's trips to Bahamas if you find
some
Osama.
Some people say it's cruel, I know. Call it the gulag, but it isn't so. It's nicer than Buffalo here at Guantanamo.
While you're detained, they might just pick your brain.
With a view so great,
so great,
and lots of time to ululate, you'll forget the urgency of the insurgency. Daiquiri's so tall,
so tall,
rimmed with sodium pentothal. Freeze your throat, you cannot yell death to the infidel. Down at Guantanamo,
where's Lindy? We miss her. And games of naked twister, nice sunsets and beaches, if you don't mind leashes. And songs on your iPods go nicely with your jihad.
Guantanamo is safer than another place we know. Standing a phone's throw.
from Russell Crowe.
Capital Steps radio show was taped in front of a really good-looking and pleasant-smelling audience at the Ronald Reagan Building and International Trade Center in Washington, D.C. It was written by Mark Eaton, Elena Newport, with thanks to Barry Biern and Mike Tilford. And now we'd like to introduce our performers first as George W. Bush, a man who's as smart as both Olsen twins put together, Jamie Zemerell. As John Bolton, a man who served a brief stint as wine steward at the Neverland Ranch, Mike Tilford. Playing Jacques Chirac, a guy who lost 200 unwanted pounds when he fired his personal trainer, Mark Eaton. As Ann Coulter, a woman who hopes to resume her friendship with Clay Aiken as soon as the restraining order is lifted, Elena Newport. Janet Davidson-Gordon gave a daring portrayal of Woman with a Finger in Her Chili in a role she prepared with several cans of Vienna sausages. And I'm Richard Paul, now gluten-free. On the piano, four-time Nobel Prize winner Dr. Mark Irwin. We'd like to thank our sound engineer Jim Smith, road crew Rich Patterson, Andy Foz, and John Simler, and permanent press secretary Bill Hurd. The Capital Steps new album is titled Four More Years in the Bush Leagues. We perform every Friday and Saturday here at the Ronald Reagan Building in Washington, D.C., and we'll be in New York City this summer for a brief run starting July 26th. For information on all of this or to download new songs, visit our website, CapitalSteps.com. Remember, if a scandal happens in the news, you can run right to our website and find out exactly what rhymes with it. We'll be back at Halloween. Thanks for listening.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by a grant from The Great Impasta, a restaurant serving foods from northern Italy. The Great Impasta is at 114 West Church in Champaign. The staff at The Great Impasta encourage you to join them in supporting WILL AM 580.
The Storm Prediction Center has issued a severe thunderstorm watch for portions of Illinois and Indiana, effective until 7 p.m. this evening. In the immediate WILL severe weather coverage area, the severe thunderstorm watch includes the following counties: Champaign, Ford, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, Piatt, and Moultrie. Remember, a severe thunderstorm watch means conditions are favorable for severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. Keep an eye on the sky for threatening weather conditions and stay tuned to WILL for the latest weather information and possible warnings. To repeat, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for portions of Illinois and Indiana until 7 p.m. this evening.
Today's broadcast is funded in part by a grant from the Illinois Arts Council, a state agency.
Coming up next, an Independence Day to remember.
Bystanders later said it was the furthest they had ever seen an animal leap when Billy Grant's pet ferret jumped from his arms and began sprinting among the Shriners, who remarkably didn't miss a lick.
This special holiday program is made possible by Harper San Francisco, publisher of Philip Gully's Harmony series. Information at harpersf.com.
Welcome to the WFYI production of Home to Harmony, A Fractured Fourth, a holiday special from the pen of writer Philip Gully. Philip, a Quaker minister, reads from his best-selling series of books about the mythical town of Harmony, Indiana, and its charming and often colorful residents. The Harmony series includes Home to Harmony, Just Shy of Harmony, Signs and Wonders, and Life Goes On. Today's story begins at the Harmony Friends Meeting, a quaint little clapboard church on the outskirts of town, whose members are preparing for the community 4th of July parade. Philip picks up the story from here.
It was Dale Henshaw's idea for Harmony Friends Meeting to build a float for the town's 4th of July parade. He had been badgering us for years to participate, but we had resisted, even when he had pointed out that every other church in town had a float in the parade. "For crying out loud, the Catholics got a float, and they ain't even Americans. They're Vaticans. We got foreigners in this town who'll build a float and march in the 4th of July parade, and we won't." That is not entirely accurate. We had marched in the 1976 Bicentennial Parade, dressed like the old-time Quakers who founded Harmony in 1824. My chief memory of growing up in this church was being forced to wear humiliating costumes at public pageants, bathrobes at Christmas nativity scenes, a towel wrapped around my midsection when I played Jesus at the Easter pageant, marching down Main Street in the Bicentennial Parade in view of my friends while dressed like the man on the Quaker Oats box. Since that time, we've not had a youth group at Harmony Friends Meeting. The children in our church hit adolescence, get wind of some scheme by the adults which will earn them the ridicule of their peers, and promptly flee to the Methodist Church. For the past 4 years, I had labored to begin a youth group, careful in nurturing the faith of the church's young people, only to have Dale scare them off when he asked them to wear T-shirts that read, "A prayer a day keeps Satan away." I was able to woo them back, but had to promise Dale we could have a float in the 4th of July parade, so long as he left the youth of the church out of it. I had a vested interest in this. My older son, Levi, had been eyeing the Methodists, and I didn't want to give him one more reason to bolt. It's not easy being the child of a pastor because of people like Dale, who believes God has called my entire family to ministry. He quizzes my sons about their beliefs and whether they've given their hearts to the Lord. He gave them Bible tracts to place in the school restrooms on the toilet tanks, just in case a child's appointed time to meet the Lord occurred in a bathroom stall. Fortunately, building the 4th of July float has distracted Dale. He formed a float committee, Asa Peacock, Harvey Muldock, and Ellis Hodge. At their first meeting, Ellis suggested building a replica of the meeting house, sporting a banner reading, "You have a friend at Harmony Friends." Asa had hoped for something a little snazzier, preferably something involving his new tractor, while Dale was pushing for a float that would convict people of their sins and bring them to their knees in humble repentance right there on Main Street. Dale has been spending a great deal of time at the Bible bookstore in Cartersburg surveying the merchandise. He's ordered bulk quantities of Bible tracts to distribute along the parade route. One of them is called "Why is Mary Crying?" According to the tract, Mary is crying because Catholics are worshiping her instead of her son, and Dale believes it's time someone set the record straight. Another tract is Flight 581, which tells about a couple who were on their way to Las Vegas to pursue a variety of sins and perversions, only to die in an airplane crash. Thankfully, they were seated next to a minister who was going to Las Vegas to start a new church and was able to lead them to the Lord, somewhere around 5,000 feet, just before the plane hit the ground. But Dale's favorite tract was called Reverend Tremendous, and was about a beloved pastor who was active in ecumenical affairs and social justice work, but forgot that he was saved by grace and not works, so went straight to hell for his efforts. Dale gave me one of those. In mid-June, after much negotiation and compromise, the float committee settled on a design, a 10-foot plywood replica of our meeting house pulled behind Asa's tractor. In what can only be described as a stunning lapse of judgment, we left it to Dale to select the scripture for the banner. He settled on Jeremiah chapter 26, verse 6. "I will make this town a curse for all the nations of the earth." Don't you think that's a bit negative, Asa asked Dale? It's just a 4th of July parade, after all, not a revival. You know, Asa, Dale said, if you want to tickle people's ears, that's your business, but I think it's time somebody in this town stood up for the truth. Asa let it go, reasoning that amidst the customary chaos of the parade, no one would likely notice their float. Harvey Moldock leads the parade in his 1951 Plymouth Cranbrook convertible and is followed by my father driving a 1939 Farmall Model M tractor. Then comes Harvey's brother-in-law, Bernie, the town policeman who runs his siren, which people don't mind since it drowns out the high school band who follow. Behind the band is the street department and the town dump truck, then the volunteer fire department riding on the tanker, followed by the Shriners from Cartersburg, large men draped over their mini-bikes, wearing fezes, weaving in and out like a braid of hair. After the Shriners, Clevis Nagel pedals his old-fashioned bicycle with its big front wheel. Those are the professionals. After them come the amateurs, the little league teams, the church floats, the bowling teams from the starlight lanes, and a politician or two passing out candy, scrounging for votes. It's the same parade as the Corn and Sausage Days parade in September, except for the Sausage Queen, who sits enthroned in the back seat of Harvey's convertible, waving to her subjects. The 4th of July parade is held in the afternoon. Then we go home for a nap and hamburgers on the grill and reassemble at the town park at dusk and sit in our lawn chairs on the hill above the pool to watch the fireworks, which are shot off from the center field of the Little League Diamond. When I was growing up, Huey Gladden from the street department was in charge of the fireworks, but in 1976, in a valiant attempt to play the national anthem using fireworks while rushing from one launching tube to another, stumbled, fell upon a tube just as a Roman candle was lifting off, and very nearly achieved orbit. These days, Daryl Furby, the fire chief, sets off the fireworks. While he lacks Huey Gladden's creativity, it is a comfort to enjoy the fireworks without worrying about a fatality. The day before the parade, my boys and I washed and waxed the Farmall tractor with my father. It's been in my front yard the past 2 summers, the centerpiece of my wife's flower bed. My father gave it to me, hoping to pass on the legacy. It was a gift I wanted to refuse, but couldn't for the sake of family harmony. He and I take turns driving it in the parades. It was my turn this year. Initially, I had my doubts, but discovered I enjoyed navigating the tractor up Main Street, past the stores and knots of people waving and throwing candy. My sons have always ridden with me in the parade, though my oldest son, Levi, increasingly concerned with his image, was starting to rebel. "We'll look like dorks," he moaned. "I'll get beat up." 11 years old, he whines as if whining were an Olympic sport. "You have to be in the parade with me," I pointed out. "Mom is helping Dina at the coffee shop, and I'm on the tractor, which means you will be, too." I said it in my "and that's that" voice to stifle any argument. The morning of the 4th, the phone rang while we were eating breakfast. It was Asa Peacock, clearly distressed. "It won't start," he said. "I've been trying for 2 hours to get it running, and it won't start." "What won't start?" "My new tractor," Asa moaned. "I can't get it going." "Gee, Asa, sorry to hear that. Can we use Ellis's tractor?" "That old piece of junk? Asa asked with a contemptible snort. You want to have people laughing at us? How about we use your tractor? I once heard of a mental illness which causes otherwise rational persons occasionally to behave in illogical ways. I have long suspected I suffer from this malady, for the next hour found me at Dale Henshaw's house, hitching my 1939 Farmall Model M tractor to a hay wagon, bearing a replica of our meeting house, draped with Dale's banner. I will make this town a curse for all the nations of the earth. Dale was stacking cartons of tracks inside the model. The Catholics get this one, he said, holding up a copy of Why Is Mary Crying? And the liberals get Flight 581 or Reverend Tremendous. It don't matter which one. He loaded a box on the wagon. What's in there? I asked. Salvation suckers. Got 'em at the Bible bookstore. They got the plan of salvation written right on 'em. See? He held one up for me to inspect. Those are as big as frisbees, I observed. Gotta be to get all the Bible verses on 'em. What are you going to do with them, Dale? Throw 'em to the kids. I don't know. What if you hit someone in the head? They're pretty heavy. Better a headache now than hell later. This was feeling like hell now, but for the sake of kindness, I didn't say so. I'd made the boys wear their nice clothes since we were representing the church. Levi had moaned about my choice of vocations. How come just 'cause you're a minister I have to do this? I'm not even sure I believe in God. Son, I have doubts myself sometimes. But belief is not required for your job. You just need to sit inside the float and pass things out to Dale. No one will even see you. But I could tell he wasn't pleased, and that the Methodists were looking more attractive every moment. I was not without sympathy. I had a fleeting recollection of plodding down Main Street on a donkey during the town's annual Palm Sunday pageant. I was 11 years old. Levi's age. It had been our church's turn to supply a Jesus, and the finger of fate had settled on me after it was discovered that Herbert Stout, the other boy in our church, was allergic to donkeys, and the elders didn't want a Jesus with hives. The 4th of July parade began at the elementary school, went north on Washington Street four blocks, hooked a left onto Main Street, looped around the town square, then headed back south toward the school. It was always exciting to see whether the front of the parade would bisect the rear of the parade, as it did in 1976 when everyone and their cousins marched in the bicentennial parade. But this year, Harvey missed Owen Stout, our perennial town board candidate, by a good 20 yards. Levi stayed crouched in the church on the float the whole time, handing out fistfuls of tracts to Dale, who distributed them to people who in his estimation needed saving. Addison, my 8-year-old, passed out the salvation suckers, eating one for every 6 he gave out. Everything was going fine until the fire department's tanker passed in front of Grant's Hardware, and the engine backfired. Bystanders later said it was the furthest they had ever seen an animal leap when Billy Grant's pet ferret jumped from his arms and began sprinting among the Shriners, who remarkably didn't miss a lick. It dodged Clevis Nagel on his bicycle, scattered the Little League teams, then froze as my 1939 Farmall Model M tractor with its original steel front wheel bore down. I swerved to miss it, causing the church to slide from the float and land upside down on the street with a splintering crash. My son Levi, though unhurt, was lodged in the steeple, his legs opening and closing in the air like a pair of scissors. Billy Grant's ferret had scrambled up Dale's leg and was perched on his head, causing Dale to speculate that God had indeed made our town a curse for all the nations of the earth, just as Jeremiah had predicted. This was the picture Bob Miles snapped for the front page of the Harmony Herald newspaper, along with a quote from Dale Henshaw, who prophesied that this was the first of many catastrophes God would visit upon our town for its sins. That night, while I was tucking him into bed, Levi said, "I'm never going to be in a parade again." I sat down beside him. "I said the same thing when I was your age, son." "Then how come you were in the parade today?" he asked. I thought for a moment. "Because Asa Peacock needed my help, and he's my friend." "Is Dale Henshaw your friend?" "Well, I wouldn't want to go on vacation with him, but I don't wish him any harm." A car turned in front of our house, its headlights casting shadows against my son's bedroom wall. "Is life always like this?" Levi asked after a while. "Always like what?" "You have to do things you don't like." "Well, sometimes it's like that." "I'm still not going to ride on the church float ever again," he said. "Fair enough, sport." I lay in bed that night, thinking how nothing ever changes. I'm 42 years old and still having to do things I don't want to do. I suppose that's the price of loving people. My son thinks he'll somehow avoid these obligations, which is a common misperception among the young. In time, of course, he'll learn otherwise. The maturity isn't about doing what pleases us, but is about bearing, with good humor, that which annoys us to no end.
I'm Nancy Wood. Joining me today is Quaker pastor and author Philip Gully. We'd like to know a little bit about you, about your background and your family, and that will help us understand where this wonderful series comes from.
Well, I grew up in a town a lot like Harmony. Still live there, Danville, and just paid a lot of attention when I was a child to the town's characters. And there were a lot of characters in that town, and still are. And I thought that it would be fun to start writing about some of these people. Of course, I would have to change their names. It's a small town, and and so that was kind of the birth for the Harmony series, kind of my experience of living and pastoring in a small Indiana community.
So when did you actually start working on this series, actually sit down and put the pen on the paper?
Oh, gosh, that would have been about 1999. And I had written a series of nonfiction books, mostly essays, and kind of running out of material, and thought, well, I'll move into fiction. And I didn't know at the time that you can't do that, that publishers get very picky about that. But I'd written the first book, and they read it, and they said, well, we think it'll work. And it's worked out very well, they tell me.
How did you know, here's the material, here are the stories, and now we've got this book?
Well, I was a bit intimidated at first writing fiction. I thought, well, it would have to be a novel. And then I thought, well, I'm not a novelist, but I can tell stories. And so the first book in the series, Home to Harmony, is just a collection of stories that span a year that are comprised of Sam Gardner, who is the main character in the book, his memories of growing up in this little town and then moving back to pastor the local Quaker meeting. And then as the series has progressed, I've become a little more bold and actually I'm working on one now that is a genuine novel.
Oh, wow.
It has a plot and everything.
And when can we expect that?
Well, that book is called A Change of Heart, and it will be out in October of 2005.
Are the characters, for the most part, based on characters or people that you knew, or is there a kernel and then you formulated the characters just based on that little piece of information?
Well, the characters are more personality types, and some of the characters are a bit overdrawn. One, so I could just have more fun with them. For instance, there's a character called Dale Henshaw, who we say knew just enough scripture to be annoying, but not enough to be transformed. And if you're in the church, you know people like Dale, who are just these people who are just utterly persuaded that they alone know the truth and that their mission in life is to tell others they're wrong. And that character's a bit overdrawn, and yet there are people like that. I get letters from people saying, we have several Dale Henshaws in our church.
What about some of the other characters? I mean, it's sort of obvious to me with Sam Gardner.
Mm-hmm.
He is a Quaker pastor.
Right.
He is a married man, has a wife, and has two sons. So how closely is he based on your life and experiences?
Well, Sam is a little bit braver than I am. Sam will actually challenge people. He has to go through a lot and suffer a lot before he's challenged. But he does finally end up confronting Dale. And I've just never been brave enough to do that. I think that's why I started writing, maybe to have an alternative income in the event I was fired, which has happened two or three times in my career as a pastor. And so Sam's a little braver. I'd say Sam is the pastor I want to be, and maybe will be when I'm not a big chicken someday.
Tell me about Asa Peacock, Harvey Muldock, and Ellis Hodge. I love those names. Where'd you get names, by the way?
We have a Quaker directory of all the Quakers in Indiana. And when I need a name, I just go there and pluck one out of the ether, and there it is.
Do you really?
Yeah, and their names almost suggest a personality. I mean, don't you know how a man named Asa Peacock is going to be? He's going to be very down home. Very simple, wise in his own way, but probably unschooled, never been to college,
mm-hmm.
but a wise, good person, yeah.
Sam is a little trickier, though. I think it's interesting in the series of books because he's the more subtle character
mm-hmm.
to kind of find things with.
Yeah, Sam is a little more complex. He's likes this small town. He values the way things were, and yet he also realizes that many times the way things were weren't always good. And so he's trying to live in a world where he can reclaim the best of what was and embrace, I think, a more egalitarian vision for everyone. And that's kind of tricky to do when you're a pastor in a small town.
That is tricky to do.
Yeah.
So what about the marriage of what we're doing with Harmony and public radio?
I like the idea of public radio in general, just this genre that tries to be the voice of the wider experience of America. And often what we hear, I think, is a very tailored representation that doesn't strike me as real or reflective of where most of us are. And so to be able to tell these stories in this venue seems to me to be a good marriage.
Hey, we found out that you also have a website, writing.
Yeah, there are two websites, actually, philipgullybooks.com. And the books come out once a year, but if you get a little hungry and need a Harmony fix in between, you can go to harmonyherald.com and sign up and get a monthly newspaper.
Well, we certainly thank you for sharing your 4th of July with us this year.
Well, thanks for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this 4th of July holiday trip to Harmony. Here's wishing you the best of all possible celebrations this year and for years to come.
This special holiday program was made possible by Harper San Francisco, publisher of Philip Gully's Harmony series. Information at harpersf.com. Home to Harmony, A Fractured Fourth, is a production of WFYI Indianapolis, Indiana, copyright 2004. Nancy Wood is the program's producer and host. The recording and editing engineer is Cedric Freeman. Original musical arrangements are by Troy Kinnett and Nancy Wood, performed by Troy Kinnett. The executive producer of Home to Harmony, A Fractured Fourth, is Clayton Taylor.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Warden Martin Subaru, a Subaru Stellar Performer certified dealership, now in their new location in front of the Savoy 16 Theater across from Warden Martin Nissan. Information on the web at wardenmartin.subaru.com.
We owe the friends at WILL heartfelt thanks for helping us build financial support for WILL Radio for this new fiscal year. Your contributions during the past year will help us to sustain our core programs in light of increasingly uncertain tax-based support. We will have final numbers to share with you later this month. But until then, thank you from all of us at listener-supported WILL Urbana.
The Storm Prediction Center has issued a severe thunderstorm watch for portions of Illinois and Indiana, effective until 7 p.m. this evening. In the immediate WILL severe weather coverage area, the severe thunderstorm watch includes the following counties: Champaign, Ford, Vermilion, Douglas, Edgar, Coles, Piatt, and Moultrie. Remember, a severe thunderstorm watch means conditions are favorable for severe thunderstorms in and close to the watch area. Keep an eye on the sky for threatening weather conditions and stay tuned to WILL for the latest weather information and possible warnings. To repeat, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect for portions of Illinois and Indiana until 7 p.m. this evening.
The following